Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that kiss. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, not in a creepy way.
Hey. Welcome, this is brother Jay. This is Drew. And brother E is taking the episode off. So tonight, brother Drew and I are going to discuss the 2018 movie, First Man. Starring,
I've been wanting to talk to you about this movie for a while, but it seemed like every time we scheduled it, somebody famous died.
Well, knock on wood, we'll make it through the episode.
Yes.
So, starring Ryan Gosling and Claire Foy, and it's got a pretty decent cast of people.
Corey Stoll is the worst human being ever.
Did he play Buzz?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, he was also seeing Lucas Haas, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, he just, I don't know. I kept expecting him to split in half like the husky in
The Thing?
The Thing. Like, because he just looked evil, and I just expecting him to be like some kind of space alien.
Yeah, it's always fun to have a Lucas Haas sighting. But yeah, there were a ton of people in this movie.
Yeah, it was a longer movie, but I paused it once because I needed to refresh my beverage. It was budgeted $59 million. Opening weekend was $16 million domestic, gross $44 million worldwide, $105 million. So, meh. It was a meh movie as far as box office, but it was.
Yeah, was this movie on your radar at all?
No, theatrically, but in the movie's defense, almost no movies are theatrically in my wheelhouse. Have been in years, even more so now in the day of COVID. But the fact that just unless I really think it's going to pop and something I'm going to benefit from being some kind of group experience, see John Wick, see Terminator, something like that, that I thought had some gravity to it. No pun intended on a space film, of course. I didn't know anything about this movie. I didn't even know it had come out, come and gone.
Yeah, the only thing I knew about it was that it was by the director of Whiplash and La La Land. So two kind of like jazz centric movies, which doesn't hold any interest for me. So when this movie came out, I didn't have any interest in it. I hadn't heard much about it at all, good or bad. So that's not something I really seeked out, but I ended up watching it on a plane. On my way to Hawaii, probably the last vacation I'll ever take. And I don't know what you thought about this movie, but I was really surprised. This movie was not at all what I expected it to be.
So I watched the movie yesterday for the first time. I will say, first of all, it moved. I mean, it didn't seem to lag to me. So that's always a good metric to me in a movie. I didn't feel like I was waiting for something else to happen. The movie just kind of happened, which is good. I thought the character development was good. I thought the sets were good. It was another one of these great looking movies. It really was a great looking movie, even considering the aesthetic of being a period piece, which Brother E hates, but not really. And So, spoiler, I liked the movie. I will say I liked it. But it was a lot sadder than I expected it to be. Yeah. It was a huge, just, I mean, it opens in a downer. So it was hard to gauge where they were trying to go and kind of the character building they were doing, what they were trying to make Neil into. You know, it was, they were trying to telegraph all these things and details. And I think that it was effective, but I don't know if that was really him. That was a character portrayal, and it was certainly a character study, but it was clearly overly dramatized. And I did a little research after the movie about it, and they dramatized a number of things to excess, which it's a movie, of course. But no, I would say that I liked it. I'm fascinated by the space program. I'm fascinated by the history of the space program. I actually just finished yet another space book on Audible. That was, I think, one of the free monthly ones, narrated by Kate Mulgrew of Star Trek Voyager fame.
Nice.
So I'm always interested in space. I think the best book I've ever listened to / read was Packing for Mars, which is by far one of the best / funniest things that I have ever embarked upon when reading about the space program, because it introduces the concept and expounds upon the reality of fecal popcorning.
Oh, nice.
Which is, you know, the space toilet. So, you know, good times.
It sounds unpleasant.
It is. Yes, the astronauts would agree with you. Because, you know,
I mean, I've worked in some remote camps where we have to bring in our own sanitation. And the thought was that, you know, one step above a pit privy, which is essentially you dig a hole in the ground and fashion a toilet over it. A much more modern version was called an incinolet.
I'm familiar with them.
Yeah, which everyone on site just called the pooper cookers, and no one enjoyed.
I can only imagine that you would have a challenge to stay out of wind range.
Yes. Yeah.
And having grown up in Alaska, I know that the winds are not stable, so that is an impossible prospect.
Indeed.
Unless you put it at the top of a hill and you stand at the bottom of the hill, but you probably don't want to be pooping at the top of a hill. So I'm just guessing. I haven't had a lot of experience. I will defer to the experts on that one.
For sure.
So you watched this on a plane and you rewatched it, I assume.
I did.
And how did you feel on your rewatch?
I think it's even better the second time around, because the when you don't know what to expect, I think this movie is probably pretty jarring. I expected it to be, you know, a celebration of, you know, the American triumph of science. And it's not really that. I mean, it's part a character study of a very driven but emotionally constipated man. And then the other half, it's kind of a horror movie. Like it's really claustrophobic. It's done with a lot of POV shots from inside the cockpit of these rickety seeming machines that they are rocketing into space, and the way it's shot and the sound design and everything, I thought it was terrifying.
It gave me some agita, definitely. Throughout the movie, when they were showing different capsules and different compartments, and they were showing the welds and the seams and the rivets that didn't line up, and I just it gave me great anxiety, because you know, I won't buy my car if there's a rivet off. Like, there's no way, right? It's all computer controlled now. But you have to realize that in those days, everything was probably largely done by hand. So, and yet it survived into space and back and didn't kill anybody too often.
Yeah, and I know we're jumping around a little bit, but I thought the best measure of how good I thought this movie was I know everyone knows how it ends.
Yes.
But even so, I was still holding my breath when they were trying to land the lunar module.
It's tension inducing. It was tension inducing. You're right. Absolutely right. It was tension inducing even knowing the story, because we've seen it. I mean, I've seen the HBO miniseries, what between the moon and the earth, and that I always get the name wrong. Tom Hanks's series that he did, which is fantastic, by the way, because I think there's 12 or 14 different episodes, and each one is kind of like a different mission ish. But also, then I've talked a lot about the Apple Plus series For All Mankind, which is equally disturbing and amazing. So, so that's a recommend. But I was happy that this was something that we get to discuss, because this is a movie that I like. So, for a number of things. So.
That entire last sequence on the moon, I think going up to the moon too, was shot in IMAX, which for the four people that saw it in IMAX in the movie theaters, that must have been an amazing experience.
Yeah, I can't imagine. But that also tells you kind of how much detail went into the shooting of this film. So it was really well done. So, so we can start on the plot here if you're ready.
Yeah.
The movie opens and I did not know what the hell was going on, but basically, Neil, you don't know it's Neil at the time. Neil is in an X-15 rocket powered glider space plane, and he's going through a series of seemingly he's trying to make a flight, or a flight test, I would assume.
He's an experimental test pilot, right? At this point,
yeah.
This is before he's selected for the astronaut program.
True. There's no communication though. Seemingly, he's just doing a bunch of stuff and listening, but he makes no noise.
Yeah.
Well, he grunts and struggles for air a couple of times, but he's not giving any verbal feedback. So the first couple of minutes of this movie are terrifying because it's shaking. See also contact. Is the vehicle is cavitating and he's going through a bunch of different tests and instrument changes, and he's seemingly in control, and then he's very much not in control. And skipping off of the atmosphere, which I suspect is not something that you really want in a test flight, but
yeah, because it's a plane, it's not a spaceship,
right?
There is so little exposition in this movie. It is all show and no tell.
But what I gathered.
Oh yeah, no, it was really good. Those were good choices. But what I gathered was. He was supposed to take this plane up to the limit of the atmosphere and then come down, and shit went bad. And instead of being able to come down under control, he actually started bouncing off the atmosphere and floating back up into space, which I imagine means death.
Well, you don't have combustion at a certain point on an aspirated oxygenated engine. At a certain altitude, there's no oxygen, right? So you lose combustion, you lose power. And again, I don't know what kind of aircraft, how much battery operations, plus you get into temperature issues, plus you get into icing issues. And funny that the last episode we recorded was Iron Man, and this is the first man. So, or just first man, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep. But they both had potentially icing issues in the upper atmosphere, so... So he struggles, has a major struggle with the aircraft. Eventually, I think yelling all kinds of things at him. It doesn't appear to me that he's listening to them, though, that he seems to know what he's doing more than they seem to know what they're doing.
This is setting up how when he's under pressure, he is like laser focused and he's just an MFing problem solver.
And stays pretty calm.
Right.
You know, doesn't panic, which is good. And eventually the aircraft touches down on the floor of the Mojave Desert, I believe. Yeah, the Mojave Desert. And the crew comes out to meet him, and there's some exposition from is it Deke? Or I couldn't remember who it was, but one of the space flight crew was basically lamenting the fact that he's not ready, he's not paying attention.
Yeah, it's not Deke yet, because Deke is with NASA, I think.
Right. It's one of those guys.
But yeah, and then it cuts to his very young daughter getting cancer treatments. So you understand why they might think he's distracted.
And Karen, who's 2 years old-ish. She's got some kind of brain tumor. She's having treatment.
Yeah, I was not okay with this part of the movie because it came out of nowhere.
I kind of figured that this would affect you. When I saw it, as soon as I saw it, I thought, "Ooh, this is a curveball. This isn't nice."
Yeah, I mean, especially the way, again, no exposition. They don't really explain anything. They just show you. And it cuts to her getting, it looks like just this really brutal treatment, to her just like vomiting and him trying to comfort her. And then they're at her funeral.
Yes.
And I remember on the plane, I almost lost it and wasn't sure I could watch the rest of the movie.
It's quite jarring. I mean, it really was. It was a very distinct tonal departure from the first part.
Mm-hmm.
Karen, his daughter, passes away. He's pretty grief-stricken at her death. The movie portrays him as being this huge record keeper, trying to meticulously map and notate everything of her treatment and her illness. I think in the hope of curing her or getting her well, to no avail, to a very awkward yet probably not inaccurate funeral portrayal and after reception, which most of us have been to, which are always, I always find them awkward. So I don't know how anybody else feels about them, but I never know what the hell to do. So,
and I thought Ryan Gosling did such a great job in this movie. He's like, he's such a great portrayal of just like that kind of generational stoicism that it seems like everybody of that era had. Or maybe I'm just projecting because my touchstones are this portrayal of Neil Armstrong and Dad.
No, I don't think you're inaccurate. I think very much the portrayal, because he played Neil very flat, which I think was not uncommon.
Yep.
That was the 50s stoicism, 50s and 60s stoicism that was, you know, just suck it up and move on before we worried about things like mental health. So Neil throws himself back into work and they're not really sure about having him back at work.
Yeah. I mean, they ground him, right?
Yeah. And they basically made him ride a desk for a while.
Yeah, brutal.
And then he tries out for to be a NASA astronaut, right?
Yep.
And that very interesting interview where they are asking him all kinds of questions, and then they point blank indirectly asked him, you know, do you think anything would distract you from your mission? He's like, well, what are you trying to ask?
Mm-hmm.
And I think his answer was a reasonable one. Of course. Of course. Of course. I mean, I'm a human being.
I really related to him in these moments. You know, whenever he's asked a question, especially if it's a question he does not appreciate, you know, whether it's being interviewed or being talked to by a senator or being interviewed for this job, he gives very, very straightforward and pithy answers. Just the kind that will make the person asking the question feel real dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is almost charming in a way.
Well, you're on his side because, you know, as horrible as it is, watching his child die in the opening minutes of this movie, it gets you on his side immediately. You feel sympathy for him, if not, you know, outright empathy.
And then from getting hired, the family up and moves to Houston,
which seems to be quite an upgrade from like their little shack, right? I don't know where they were, but
I don't know. It was like Appalachia somewhere. It really was some kind of back hills, middle of nowhere. I mean, it was cute. It was quaint, but yeah. At this point, it turns out that the Soviets have upped the ante, and now America is scrambling to try and catch up because, you know, of course, the great Russians, they can't beat us, even though they had up to that point.
And they continued for a while.
They did.
Oh, here's the one thing that just bugged me throughout the whole movie. Gemini?
Yeah, but I think that was a product of the 60s.
I assume the 60s and Texas. But probably. Project Gemini, come on. Come on.
Well, at least they didn't call it Apollo. The Apollo space program.
Yeah, I was waiting for Apollo.
But I think, yeah, no, I, it is, it was cringe inducing. Definitely that.
Yeah. So yeah, the people he gets recruited with, so there's, one of the John Connors, and there's, the little reporter dude from Almost Famous, All Grown Up.
Yeah, it was strange. And then they put it in the little, they put him in the Vomitron, right? That's the first thing we see.
Yep.
Where he goes twice. Mm-hmm. I don't know how accurate that is, but he's like, no, I got this. Let's go again. And then you cue forward from them all having gone through this exercise, supposedly, and you see them all in their class afterwards, and they all look green and pale, and most of them have puke all over their gear. So,
yeah. And what I love about that scene is they're not making a hero out of him. I mean, he does not do well. He passes out the first time. And yeah, he's stubborn. So when he wakes up, he says he's okay and wants to go again. But then they just cut to him just ralphing his guts out in the bathroom.
In one of the filthiest bathrooms I've seen since Trainspotting.
Yeah, that was pretty rough. But the big burly military guy who was kind of scoffing at Armstrong comes in right after him to do the exact same thing.
Was that Gus Grissom?
I don't know.
I can't remember who it was.
I just kept thinking of him as John Connor. So Jason Clark, he played Ed White.
Ed White. Settled into Houston. The Russians have their EVA. Armstrong is told that he's going to command the Gemini 8 with Dave Scott as the pilot.
Yeah, I mean, intermixed with all of these is some really good work by Claire Foy as his wife, Janet. I thought she did such a good job of being like the matriarch who's holding the family together when her husband is only focused on his space missions. She had some stoicism about her too, but she was also not afraid to throw down when she thought it was necessary.
Oh, not unlike our mother.
Yeah. Have you seen The Crown?
No.
Yeah. So Claire Foy, she's great as a young Queen Elizabeth. So I like her quite a bit. I think she's good.
And then we have a series of tragedies through training. where it, Charlie Bassett and somebody else were killed in a plane crash.
Almost Famous is the only other civilian dude. C, right?
Yeah.
Somebody C?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's at the post-funeral reception that we are introduced to Buzz Aldrin as the villain of the movie.
He really... I wonder why that was a choice, because they really did make him out to just to be a reprehensible, awful bastard of a human being.
Yeah, I mean, I have to think that...
It must have been some either anecdotal evidence or somebody who made this movie had a grudge.
Yeah, I just have to think that when they were doing research, they found out that... I assume that he's well-respected, but everybody must have thought he was just a giant dick. Because if not, they do a really good job of assassinating his character in this movie.
Just repeatedly. And of course, he comes up with that retort, like, I'm just saying what everybody's thinking.
Yeah, and then later when he does that again, Neil just
shuts him down.
In his deadpan delivery, just looks at him and he goes, maybe you shouldn't. But with this tone, they just like shut him down.
It was so satisfying, though.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so now Armstrong, Neil, and Armstrong and Scott launched Gemini 8 to do a docking with the unmanned Agena to see how.
And sorry, I have to. It's Gemini.
Gemini.
Gemini 8. I know it's impossible. It's impossible to say.
It brings me back to the Fifth Element, because I think they're the Gemini croquettes or whatever they are, the stupid prize food that causes the whole contest. But
I'm still mad about your guys' Fifth Element episode. That ruined a seminal moment from my childhood.
It did? How did we manage that? I mean, I'm not saying we didn't. No way surprised me.
I think I told the story on the very next episode after that, where I was listening to it, and I was describing it to Eric about how when we saw that movie in the theater together, I was kind of dismissive of Chris Tucker's kind of over the top performance and the stupid opera part, and Eric just kind of shot me down and gave me like an older brother talk about how. No, it was really good and interesting, and that's what makes movies great, is because, you know, when you see something different and unique like that, you can really appreciate someone else's perspective. And that always stuck with me. But then during your guys' talk, Eric was like, oh man, that part was so dumb. I couldn't stand him.
Well, you know,
what the?
The prism of time comes for us all. You've seen the Asian singer that can actually recreate the opera?
No.
She can actually sing most of it, which is impressive, because some of those notes are not possible. And yet, so I'll find the link, because Eric will put it in, or maybe he'll drop it in right here.
Hope not. That would be quite a departure from this movie.
Yeah, well, we're all over the place. It doesn't matter. So they launched the Gemini 8, right? Gemini 8. Where are my notes?
Mm-hmm.
Gemini 8.
Gemini.
And they successfully dock with the Agena after some tension about being able to find it, which I can only imagine at, like, you know, 90,000 or however many million miles they're traveling up over the Earth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that was a callback to a scene beforehand when they were all kind of in launch to the moon school. And it was one of the few times the entire movie that you actually saw Armstrong like excited about something. It was when he came home and he was telling his wife about something interesting he learned about how to navigate in orbits and about how it's the opposite of what you think, because you actually have to decrease speed to drop down to a lower orbit in order to catch up with something that's in a higher orbit. And he seemed genuinely excited about learning that.
And his wife seemed equally interested. And I can't tell if she was just shining him an honor, if she was actually in full comprehension. I have to believe she was a reasonably smart lady. So,
yeah, but she was also probably so appreciative that he was willing to string more than 4 words together that she was just along for the ride.
He's not a man of many words, so. Except maybe shut up. They successfully dock with the Agena, and then things seem to go to hell. They have some problem with the roll control thrusters where they basically are spinning out of control. And they basically evac from the Agena dock, and then still can't seem to get things under control. NASA doesn't know what the hell is going on at ground control, so they're trying to figure it out. And eventually, even though Scott passes out, basically, Neil very, very nearly doesn't, but pulls it out of the end and manages to save their vehicle from the uncontrollable spin.
Yeah, so they had it turns out they had a thruster stuck open, right?
Yeah.
So they started spinning, and they thought it was the Agena that was doing it. So when they couldn't get it under control, they released themselves from the Agena, but because it was their thruster, they started spinning even faster after that.
Because they had less weight, less mass. Yeah.
I think at one point they said they were spinning as fast as 1 revolution per second.
They were headed to 1, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, so Armstrong was seconds away from passing out.
Yeah, it's like life in a centrifuge.
And the way this whole mission was shot, like it's shot
really,
really tight. And I don't think there were any external shots, right? Everything was inside. Like when they're launching, you only got to see the outside from that tiny little window. And then once they were trying to find the Agena, you could only see out their window. You could never see like a wide shot of them.
It was really smart cinematography.
Yeah, because it made you as a viewer feel so claustrophobic. And when they're spinning, it was terrifying.
The lights go out.
As the viewer, you couldn't get your bearings.
The noise, too. There was a lot of good sound in this movie. Because you really did think you were there. At least my sound system, the dog was looking at me like, what are you watching? So it made some noise. But Neil manages to get it all straightened out. They get back down on the ground. Of course now.
Oh, and during that, they also cut back to Janet, who had, what she called the squawk box, right?
Yes.
So she had a feed hardwired into her home so she could hear the communications and listen in. But when the astronauts were about to die, Deke had it shut off.
Yeah, I think all of the astronauts' families have those in their homes.
Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, so she stormed down while her husband was still on mission to threaten NASA with going to the press unless they turned the box back on.
And pretty much emasculated him and called him a child. Called them a bunch of children, actually.
Yes.
Which you know, not necessarily undeserved, but
Yeah, because she was trying to tell him that it's safe and they have everything under control, and she pretty much just called bullshit.
Yeah, that's why you turned it off.
You're just sending them up there in toys and hoping that everything works out. Turn the box back on.
Yeah. It was kind of satisfying, though. It's nice to see that. It's nice to see, you know, the old boy network get this smack around. So,
and it was a great like audience surrogate moment because unless you're like a real hardcore history junkie, you probably like me for the second part, not the first part. If you're like me, you probably have a very idealized idea of what the space program was like. And this movie that you're seeing, like all the janky looking spacecrafts that they've put together and how jarring it was to travel in them and how uncomfortable everything looked and how rickety everything sounded. It really took the shine off the space program. Their accomplishments were amazing, but they seemed to do it with baling wire and duct tape.
Yeah. Also, apparently, at the end of every mission, they would smell so bad. The whole contents of the capsules would smell so bad. I can't even imagine, but... You know, that's the price you pay. Some of the other things that happen is that I found out something interesting in the space book that I just read, that one of the biggest problems with space travel, especially the short term, is that because you're no longer in the force of gravity, your spinal column extends longer because it's no longer compressed. But none of the muscles have time to grow, so you instantly have these massive muscle aches up and down your back the entire time. Like, oh, that's nice. Also, it messes up your eyes for the rest of your life.
Because of the pressure? The difference in pressure?
Yep. Really do, and bone density. The bone density is the biggest thing. Which they say, you know, you can mitigate with exercise and weight bearing, but it's hard to weight bear in low or zero gravity, so... But I digress. So now they are back on the ground and there's going to be a big investigation because this is not what the space program wants or needs. This is kind of a black eye. However, they send Neil to kind of schmooze with the Senate, right? Or Congress. Mm-hmm. And they send him as kind of the ambassador to kind of, you know, take the edge off of things. But now they're handed yet an even bigger PR problem because the Apollo 1 plugs out test happens.
Well, even before we get to that, I don't know why they would send Neil Armstrong to be an ambassador. He's so bad at it.
Better than Buzz.
No, but Buzz is actually really, like, in the press conferences, Buzz is actually really charming and funny. Because he's a bit of a ham and he is willing to play to the crowd. But yeah, so while they're at the White House, they're supposed to be launching the Apollo 1 with his friend John Connor.
I've seen this depicted in many different films, and it is equally, every time I see it, it kills me every time, no pun intended. It is difficult to watch.
I did not know what was coming, and it looked terrifying and awful.
There's a lot of speculation about what really happened. Some say it was an arced wire from some wiring that had some of the wire housing get rubbed loose. Others say that it was the high pressure oxygen environment, which they had on Earth, would never have been as high pressure oxygen out in space. And having that much oxygenated pressure that Velcro actually can explode and cause sparks. Mm. So there's lots of speculation about what happened. I don't think they've ever really had a full determination. There's lots of little theories about it. It really doesn't matter because basically the three of them got cooked instantly inside a capsule that they couldn't get open because, of course, they engineered it in such a way that there would have been no way they could have gotten out.
Yeah, and the timeline in this movie is really fuzzy because, again, there's no exposition. So I don't know what the difference in time was, but the way the movie moves, even though there have now been two accidents where astronauts have died, the program just keeps chugging along. It's not like, you and I lived through the Challenger accident, and that shut down NASA for a couple years, right?
Yes. I've actually read the Challenger accident, the Congressional Challenger accident report. It's not a good read.
They found that the initial reports that the astronauts died instantly was not the case, right?
Was not the case. They were alive for, I think they said, 47 seconds.
Yeah.
Some of them had activated their some kind of escape mechanism. They did not die instantly. Which is not surprising when you're considered, even though you're surrounded by all this propellant and fuel, but you're also encapsulated in something that's ostensibly meant to protect you from outer space, that you would live for a little while. I think that would have just been an awful way to, I can't imagine. Having said that, if you gave me the opportunity to go to outer space, I would still go. So if I could afford a SpaceX flight, I would go. No doubt about it. I'm a little rotund, so I suspect not. My payload's probably a little too much.
Maybe for your birthday.
I'm good. Thank you. Are you kidding? I can't even fly to Alaska. What makes you think I'm going to fly it out of space?
Oh, I know.
I can't even go to Home Depot. So let's see. So the plugs out test kills three astronauts on the pad. Very public, very ugly, very somber. And just really kind of demoralizing, I think. Neil obviously doesn't deal with death very well in general. And
yeah, I mean, and there are some hearings. Another thing I really appreciated about this movie is it showed a perspective of the public opposition to the space program that I had never seen before. And it was done in a really clever way and well-timed in the movie.
Whitey's on the moon.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't linger on it, but they certainly give it some time to breathe.
They didn't need to linger on it. It was incredibly well done. And was both shocking and made me laugh out loud.
Well, and there was, I assume that was actual footage of Kurt Vonnegut giving an interview
about New York. I believe it was
about how we're spending billions to try and go to the moon, but he just wants a livable New York City.
That's very Kurt Vonnegut. Also, maybe not an unfair slight at that time. But I've never lived in New York, so I don't know. Let's see. So Apollo 1, they move forward, have more training, and then they put Neil in the lunar landing research vehicle, right? The simulator, the real simulator.
Yeah, so they cut right from the hearings and kind of the public outcry to Neil flying the ricketiest looking... It was almost like Wright Brothers-esque, right? A version of a lunar lander.
It looks like those Boston Labs self-walking robots now.
Yeah. Except nothing moves.
which, by the way, I think many astronauts have said the most dangerous of all of the things they ever did was this thing.
It looked terrifying. I mean, he almost dies just testing it out in the desert.
Which was some dramatization, by the way, because he actually didn't sustain a head injury as much as he bit his tongue so hard that he couldn't talk for 3 days.
I can imagine how that is not very cinematic.
Yeah, it would have made it difficult to tell the story, but, you know, but Neil says, you know, he, whether or not it's attributed to him or not, but he, you know, they tell him, like, we, you know, we, you could have been killed out there, and, you know, we have to be careful about these things. And he's like, no, we do these things here so they don't happen up there, which is a fair point, I think.
Yeah, we need to fail here so we don't fail up there. Yeah, and then the guy tries to further prove his point by saying, yeah, but at what cost? And Neil responds with, you're asking that now?
Yeah, it's a little late.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a little, you should look behind you. There's a lot of wreckage already, so.
Yeah, and there have already been many people who died. And I think that encapsulated his mindset at that point was, that if they quit now, if he quit now, then everybody who died, their deaths would have been in vain.
Which is not an unfair point. And I think the other point that they would make is they all go into it knowing that they could die, and they would still willingly do it anyway.
Yeah. Is this where they cut to this, the really, again, like right out of a horror movie, the chilling scene with Ed White, the John Connor dude, his wife just like zoning out in the driveway.
Like Dawn of the Dead style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Janet going over to comfort her. And this whole thing gave me the heebie-jeebies.
I did not know the hell what was going to go on with that. I seriously thought it was going to turn into a horror movie.
Yeah.
I thought like she was going to be eating kitten brains out of her trunk or something. I really didn't know what the hell was going on. But also you have that, there's a moment, and I don't remember when it is, but there's a moment where, well, it was after the Apollo 1 memorial where Neil's like, I'm out, I'm leaving, I'm done. And Janet's like, no, we're not. And he's like, screw this, I'm out.
No, that was earlier. That was after the,
was
Almost Famous, dude. Yeah. Cause that was after, Buzz was being a dick.
Oh, gotcha. And then he's out across the street with his super tiny camera or whatever it was, telescope, staring at the moon. And I don't know who was it. I don't know who came to see him.
It was Ed White.
Was it? Yeah.
The guy who died in Apollo 1.
And, oh, that's right. So it was before. And he was like, do I look like, do I want to talk? I'm not here because I want to talk to somebody. Which was like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah, he doubled down, too. So the guy's trying to tell him that he needs to go be with his wife, Janet. And he's like, do you think I'm out here because I want to talk to people? And Ed gives him a chance. He's like, what? Excuse me? And he just doubles down. It's like, do you think I'm out here because I want to talk to people?
And, you know, I have used that tone of voice before in my real life. I recognize.
I am aware. Yes,
I recognize that
you've used it on me before.
To be fair, you've used it on your children at this point.
Oh yeah, probably today.
Also, I got it from Dad, so you know, runs in the family. That I think it, and then there's another point where Neil opens up about the fact that, you know, he finally mentions Karen after they say he never talks about Karen. He talks about, you know, how Karen loved the moon, right?
I thought it was a swing set. Like he noticed that one of the other astronauts had a swing set in the yard. And he said, Karen loved the swing set. Yeah. And again, I think that was Ed White.
It's just so discordant. It was just such an odd, like, where did this come from? But anyway, and they go on and Apollo 11 launches. And
well before that, so Neil finds out that he's going to be the captain of the Apollo 11 mission. Where? In a bathroom.
Oh, that's Deke, right.
Yeah, Deke comes and finds him and says, we've selected you. And yeah, he's really, he's like,
okay.
Great. Yeah. But yeah, there's the other scene with Janet when the both of them are watching the Apollo 10 mission come back after being successful. So that was like the final indication that it's a go. And again, Claire Foy just does such a great job of showing how distraught she was that meant she knew that he was going to try and go to the moon.
He's next. Mm-hmm. So they work up to that, and then they have this pretty big dust up where she's like, no, you're not leaving. You're not just leaving. You're not avoiding the kids and leaving. You're going to tell them that you might never be coming back because I'm not doing it.
Oh, that whole sequence was so gut wrenching.
And one of his kids just looked like a human dial tone. He was like,
yeah, chip off the old block.
Yeah. And the other one was like, you're going to miss my swim meet, which is like, oh, that would be me. That was me right there. So, not really looking at the big picture, but, I think they portrayed him as having had a pretty frank discussion, but then I don't know that he was capable of having anything but a frank discussion. I don't think it would be in him to have nuance or subtlety.
Yeah, it was so clinical. It was like, here's what we're doing. Here's all the precautions we've made, but, you know, nothing is certain.
Yeah. I was like, okay, well, that's a dose of realism they probably weren't ready for, but okay. Life goes on. And so then Apollo 11 takes off.
And this was different. They actually showed you from outside. They didn't do any wide shots, but they actually did have shots so that you could actually see the rocket and you could see the modules when they were in space. I don't know if that's when they switched to IMAX, but this part of the movie looked substantially different than the others.
It was loud, too.
Yes, very loud.
I can't imagine what it really... I mean, if any of those sounds are remotely what it sounded like, I can't imagine what... But I guess when you're strapped to a big gas tank, I imagine that's kind of what... You know, I guess you're in for that ride, right? Mm-hmm. So they get up. They get up on Apollo 18, get up, and...
I didn't quite follow the sequence of events. So they got into Earth orbit... and then they had to break apart
the
command module and turn it around, right? And then redock the other end.
Yeah, because they had to pull it out of the rocket, basically, because it got sent up
like backwards, right?
Yeah, because I imagine aerodynamically, that's, you know, that
it's some wild design. That's some wild engineering and design.
Well, I imagine it was the most bang for their buck. Also, probably the least resistance as far as gravity and rocket fuel, while maximizing cargo space, while minimizing the need for weight and metal. Because, you know, the whole thing about leaving the Earth is gravity. It's just getting the escape velocity. Because once you're out in outer space, then there's no resistance, there's no problem. If you have a fine propellant with any degree of probability, you can scoot around for a great long time. But it's all the cost up to that point, which is why, you know, we need a space elevator, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they had good reasons for designing it the way they did, but it just seemed wild to add a couple extra steps of we have to detach, turn around, reattach, and then pull out the lunar module part of it. Eh. It's just extra steps to go wrong, but I'm sure they had their reasons.
Like all of it was an extra steps that could go wrong.
Yeah.
See Apollo 13. So, let's see. They dock, undock, and then they make their lunar landing attempt, which, as you said earlier, even knowing how it really happens, didn't make it any less tense.
Well, I assume this is mostly accurate, but it sure was dramatic. Dramatic in a way I had no idea about. Like, I didn't realize that the landing site they had picked out turned out not to be navigable because of huge car-sized boulders.
Well, and they missed the site anyway. So, I mean, it was a comedy of errors. But they almost nearly had to abort because of fuel. I mean, they were just seconds away.
Yeah, because they were trying to pass over that giant crater.
Because they didn't really want to land in a crater where they're not sure they could get out of. Mm-hmm. Plus, if they were in the crater doing scientific experiments, getting out of the crater to do the experiments would also be difficult. Also, would have been even colder.
Yep.
Which, since you're in outer space, it's pretty cold anyway, but, you know.
What I love about the choices that this movie makes is, again, when they're trying to land, a lot of it is first person. So you're watching the surface of the moon kind of glide in front of you as they're trying to touch down before they run out of fuel. And that's a very triumphant moment. And in other movies, you'd expect there to be like a crescendo of the score. And in this movie, the sound just drops out completely. Just nothing. And not in an anticlimactic way either. It's just it really makes you feel the to use your pun, the gravity of the moment even more.
Also, it really proved how well they were acting because you felt the tension between them. Because there was clearly tension between them.
Yep.
Because you get the impression that Buzz was ready to abort.
Yeah, and Neil is he's so laser focused. He's not communicating. he's just doing.
They were talking about the 1201 and the 1202 errors that they keep having, the program errors that they have, the 1201 alarm, the 1202 alarm, is because...
Oh, they didn't know what those meant, right?
No one knew what those meant. I mean, it turns out later that what it really meant was that the onboard computer was receiving so much data, it was screaming stop. It was like, I can't handle any more data right now. You need to stop. Because all the telemetry, all the radar, all the everything that was going on, and all the instrumentation, the computer just could not handle it. It didn't have the computing capacity. So that 1201 and 1202 are like, you need to hold up for a minute. I need to catch up. And they just ignore it. They're like, nope, just ignore it. We're go. But it's also really sobering to think that, you know, the first iPod I ever had more memory by far, by thousands of times, orders of magnitude, than went up on the Apollo.
Yeah, it is unimaginable how they pulled this off.
Well, they didn't. It was all on the soundstage, so.
Come on. Come on. Didn't one of the astronauts punch out conspiracy theorist documentarian?
Yeah, who, like, I want to say it was them? I want to say it was Buzz.
Of course. He would, right?
Oh, there's footage of it. 72-year-old Buzz Aldrin punch a jerk in the face for calling him a liar.
That's so fitting.
I shouldn't laugh. It makes me laugh. All right, so they land. They finally find the site. And then they have the big drama about Neil getting out first, which Neil gets out first and has his little speech that everybody quotes, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's some putzing around, and he tosses Karen's bracelet into a crater or something. There's no actual evidence of this having happened. However, there is also no lack of evidence that it couldn't have happened. Apparently, other astronauts have brought things up and left them on the moon. Some people brought pictures of relatives. One of the crews brought up some of the remains from the Apollo 1 astronauts and put them on the moon. So there is not. So there is some precedent that astronauts have left things on there. We don't know. But this was a very nice manipulative moment.
Oh, even though the first time I watched this on the plane, surrounded by strangers, even though I knew I was being manipulated by the movie, I still could not stop the tears from squeezing out of my eyeballs in public. It's not a great moment for
me. Don't you hate that?
It was very effective.
Well,
I held it together this time, but not by much.
As a father of daughters, I imagine it hit you in the feels pretty easily.
It was much like the first scene with Karen, it came out of nowhere. See, like, what's he doing? Oh, fuck.
But yeah, so the Whitey's and the Moon song was great. I kind of want a copy of it. So I didn't do any research
yet. That has to be real. It has to be. They cannot have made that up for this movie. If they made that up for this movie should have won all the Oscars.
I agree with you completely. Because it was really kind of like a performance more than it was a song.
It was like a beat poetry, right?
Yeah,
that's a lot of pen clicks you're doing.
Oh no, it's a real thing. It is indeed a real thing.
It had to be.
Gil Scott Heron, Whitey on the Moon.
We have a poem here. It's called Whitey on the Moon. And it was inspired by some whiteys on the moon. So I want to give credit where credit is due. All right. That's it.
A rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the Moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bills, but Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while Whitey's on the moon. You know, the man just upped my rent last night, cause Whitey's on the moon. No hot water, no toilets, no lights, but Whitey's on the moon. I wonder why he's upping me, cause Whitey's on the moon. Well, I was already giving him 50 a week, and now Whitey's on the moon. Taxes taking my whole damn check. The junkies make me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up. And as if all that crap wasn't enough, a rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. Was all that money I made last year for Whitey on the moon? How come I ain't got no money here? Whitey's on the moon. You know, I just about had my fill of Whitey on the moon. I think I'll send these doctor bills, air mail special. To Whitey on the Moon.
Released in 1970.
Oh, that timing doesn't quite follow,
still effective. The album was released in 1970. He may have done it and then just recorded it later. So, because this looks like a studio recording. But Whitey on the Moon. So I will add a link to that. So anything else before I issue my judgment of summary?
Well, the last scene I thought was very affecting too.
With Kennedy?
With Janet and Neil reconnecting while he's in quarantine. I don't even remember if they say anything, but it's like the only time Neil actually shows affection. And Janet has no idea how to react to him.
I think he said something pithy because she laughed. But it was so witty and pithy, I don't remember.
I thought that was a nice touch, a good way to end the movie.
Yeah. I also imagine that would have been incredibly difficult to be in quarantine for that period of time. And then I think, oh, wait, we're all in quarantine now.
Yeah. I bet Neil Armstrong was fine with it. I mean, he's the one that pulled the Don Draper move where he came home and with his face all fucked up and everybody was like, what happened? What's going on? And he just was like, oh, I forgot something at the office, and just takes right back off. So I'm sure he was okay being in quarantine for 3 weeks.
Wow. I was looking for stuff on Buzz Aldrin. He was an asshole.
What did you do? Did you Google Buzz Aldrin asshole?
No, Buzz Aldrin punches guy. And the third result was legendary astronaut Buzz Aldrin speaks out after suing his own children.
No wonder he was the villain of the movie. But he was portrayed as being very competent.
Oh, he does punch him right in the face. Nice.
Good for him.
Buzz Aldrin was apparently a cantankerous coot. I will say this was an A movie. It was a great movie. I'm glad I watched it. I don't know what could have made it better. I don't think it necessarily needed to be any better. I think it would have been a fantastic miniseries. But I think it did a good service to Neil Armstrong, because the story was ostensibly all about him. Mm-hmm. But they gave enough about the other astronauts in the program that it gave some balance. So I like this movie. I would recommend it to anybody who hasn't seen it. And as you said, I will probably likely go back and rewatch it at some point, because I'm interested to see what I missed, because I kept expecting things that didn't happen. And like I said, I thought she was going to eat kittens out of the trunk. So, you know. But no, this is an A movie. You should watch it if you haven't seen it. So was it worth it?
Yeah, I agree with you. This movie is absolutely worth it. And it's worth a rewatch, too, because there is so much stuff. And it is so different than probably what you're expecting, that the first time is probably so unsettling that, yeah, you're going to miss a lot of stuff. But I really enjoyed the movie both times I watched it. I really appreciated the perspective that this brought to the story. I mean, a story that kind of everybody knows the surface level of. Yeah, I thought this movie was really well crafted. You mentioned before, it looks great. And I think for the most part, there wasn't any green screen. They did it with practical effects and LED lights outside the windows of the spacecraft to simulate movement. So I think this movie is an amazing accomplishment. I'm sad I missed the opportunity to watch it in IMAX, because I can't imagine how breathtaking the last 40 minutes of this movie would have been.
Yeah.
And the performances are great. I never think about Ryan Gosling as being, you know, as one of the A-list actors, but he's always so good in everything he's in. And he always seems to pick really weird roles, which I appreciate. He's fantastic in this movie. Claire Foy is great in this movie. And all of the other people that you're going to recognize who have much smaller roles, they all do such a good job in this movie.
I think the how I know Ryan Gosling was a good actor is because after about 30 seconds, I forgot it was him.
Yeah. Yeah, this whole movie is structured in a way that it feels so immersive, almost like a documentary, because there's so little exposition and everything is shot either so close up or from the first person point of view that it makes you feel like you are there in the moment with these people. And I was really surprised by how good this movie was, because this is not a movie I remember people talking about much.
I had never heard of it until I saw it come up on my queue somewhere, either on Amazon or Netflix, and added it. And then, of course, I think we were going to watch it, and then something came up, and then it mysteriously disappeared from all the queues. And I was like, damn it. So,
yeah.
So do you have any housekeeping?
Well, we celebrated Dad's birthday last weekend.
Oh,
we missed you and Jesse, but it was a good time. It was a little odd for people to actually get together, but, We were outside most of the time. Mom and Dad actually went out on the lake.
I saw.
They have a little pedal boat, and they actually went out there. I didn't think they would, but they did.
They're adorable.
They're really funny because you know, the kids were on the water too. They had kayaks and an inner tube, and as soon as Grandma and Grandpa went out on the lake, I assume they went out to kind of enjoy. It was such a beautiful day to enjoy some peaceful time on the water. But as soon as they were out there, like, all the kids just converged on them.
Yeah, but I think after all the social isolation, I don't know that being out on the water by themselves was their priority. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it was nice to have a couple minutes of solitude, but on the other side of the spectrum, I think they were really excited to be around everyone. So,
yeah, and it was good to have all the cousins get together. They are Journey and Emma are so cute together. They are very funny.
They making a little mischief.
They were just they were holding down the fort. They were both chilling and hanging out.
Oh, well, that's good. Were there a lot of fireworks in Willow?
Not. They were actually more on the third than on the fourth. Or maybe I was just so tired. I went to bed before. But we actually did some sparklers with the kids, which seemed like a much better idea than than it turned out to be. Because the kids were all excited, but then when you try and hand them a flaming sparkler, they don't really know what to do with it. Like, it's not something you want to get back right away.
Yeah, no.
Especially not with the sparkling end pointed at your face.
Yeah, you don't want the business end of that coming back at you. No. It was pretty. There were fireworks here. My dog. Traditionally, what I've done when I did it with Beau, I did it with Griffin when I first got him. So my methodology for 4th of July is I always, for the first year or two I have the dog for the 4th of July, I put Saving Private Ryan on and play it a couple times throughout the day, because like the first 12 minutes of that is nothing but explosions.
Yeah.
And so it kind of desensitizes them. And if I'm watching a movie and they're sitting, the dog's sitting next to me on the couch, it really just, they just kind of dismiss it. Bo really didn't care at all. Griffin will bark at the ceiling because he thinks somebody's trying to break into the house. I assume that's why he barks at the ceiling, but he's not scared. He doesn't growl or anything. So, I actually have a picture of, or I have a video of like 7 seconds of Griffin asleep on my couch, and over his shoulder, you can see the window in my living room as my street is on fire with explosions. So that tells you how little he cared about it. Then I have another picture about an hour later where there are 7 fire battalions on my street because one of the idiots set themselves on fire.
Oh, good times.
So the fire trucks he did bark at.
So, that's fair. That's fair.
Like, all right. But other than that, it was pretty quiet. The yard didn't catch on fire. So, you know, It was seasonably normal, so it wasn't super dry here, so we're good for that. As I mentioned, we have plane tickets for Alaska, so now it's the big COVID roulette that we don't know what's going to happen. So,
yeah, I just ended my third week back at work. Don't know how long that's going to last.
Are there cases coming up? You have people in the office coming positive, or?
I don't want to comment on that, but there are, I mean, cases are on the rise all over Alaska and Anchorage in particular. And
yeah, it's going to happen.
People are real mad that, the city seems to be calling out bars.
Without proper tracing and tracking controls, you have to do that.
Yeah.
It's not a punitive against the business. It's the only moral thing to do in a pandemic. Portland, Oregon in general, numbers are going up and spiking. So I think we are now being frozen back in phase one. So I am just tired of it from a work perspective because it changes how I have to do my work. And also I have employees that may not necessarily wish to adhere to the state rule that is in effect right now that you must wear facial coverings in all public spaces, which include my clinics. So
yeah,
there are employees that don't seem to want to, which I don't get. I'm like, why wouldn't you? It's not like you're working in a back office. I get it if you don't want to wear a mask in a back office. I get it. Okay. I understand. If I'm like today, I was alone in my office. I didn't wear a mask in the office. Anytime I left the office, though, I masked up.
Yep, that's exactly how we are. If we're in our office, we no mask. But yeah, if anybody comes and visits us, mask on.
Yeah.
If you leave your office, mask on.
Yeah. If somebody comes and visits you, though, they you should have 30 minutes notice. They shouldn't be coming into your cube until after you've worn a mask for 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. There's a lot of stuff going around. So, I don't know. Yeah. But Alaska Airlines was, you know, at least there's a year to cancel. So if we aren't able to make the December flight, we'll figure something out. So we'll come up for Ferrandi or something. I don't know. But at some point, I'm going to have too much vacation time. So at some point, I'm going to have to take time off.
Ferrandi. Yeah, if Christmas doesn't work out, Ferrandi would actually be pretty cool. Because we found out this year that we have a really good opportunity to view the start of the Iditarod. Oh, yeah.
I didn't even think of that.
Near our place at Willow.
I've never been able to go to Ferrandi and enjoy it in any kind of appreciable manner because I lived there and so I worked. So, so yeah, that was always been kind of a desire of mine. So who knows? That also assumes that you'll have, you know, enough snow and stuff for Ferrandi. So who knows?
That's true.
Possibilities. Possibilities abound. That also assumes I don't know when the parents are going to go to Hawaii either. So
no reason they should.
I know they want to. I think they already bought tickets. But that also assumes Hawaii will let them come. So that's a different issue. Otherwise, just kind of waiting. My software project's cooking along. Supposedly that's going to happen in the next couple weeks. So yeah, a little bit of tension.
Oh, forgot to ask. Did Jesse watch First Man with you?
No.
No, he wasn't interested.
So he's been working. So their facilities reopened.
Oh, good.
And that's so good. He is actually working a fair bit more. He's basically back to full time. In fact, he actually got overtime this week, which was surprising. So he's been.
I assume he's pretty happy about that.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Oh, okay.
I think he got used to not working as much. The downside of not working as much means not as much money. So
right.
I think he will be much happier when at his next paycheck when he has more than his full hours plus a day of overtime. So I think the benefit will outweigh the grumpiness. But
that's fair. I was, even though I've been working the whole time, I was pretty grumpy is a good way to put it when I started going back to the office. I still am a little bit.
For me, depending on when I go back to my office, because right now we're all staying socially distant, so I haven't seen my downtown office in, it's been some time. It's been 2 months maybe. So I've been in my east office and there's only one other person I share the office with, and she's working every other day from home. And I work every other day from home, but depending on which week it is, I have Monday, Wednesday, I work from home. And then the next week I have Tuesday, Thursday, I work from home, and she's alternating just Tuesdays and Thursdays. So one of the weeks I actually see her, 2 days we share the office, but for the most part, like this week, I didn't see another human being at all when I was working. Except that I had to travel to a bunch of pharmacies for other reasons. But my office-wise, I didn't see another human being.
That's which, nice.
Kind of. Except it's sometimes... being alone in the office means that I start to lose social skills. So when I do have to interact with people, I I'm awkward, which is always fun and pleasant for me.
You go all Neil Armstrong on him?
Not quite. But I am so tired of conference calls and Zoom, and I just can't even tell you. People do not know how to... Anyway. People need to learn. What gets me worst is the people that breathe into their phones instead of muting them.
Yep.
Just stop breathing into your phone. I don't want to hear you breathe into your phone. Just stop.
Yeah, here's also a fun tip. That awful echo that you hear only when you talk, you're the asshole.
Well, I think I posted a big long rant on Facebook at one point. Mute yourself if you're not saying anything. If you're not actively talking, mute, first of all. Second of all, don't shove the phone across the table unless it's muted. If you're too lazy to pick up the phone and replace it on the table somewhere, do us a favor. I don't have to hear the phone scoot across the surface because you're too lazy. Third, commit. If you're going to start talking, continue talking. Don't pause because you suddenly hear somebody else start talking, because then they're going to stop talking as soon as they realize you're talking, and then you're going to restart, and they're going to restart, and it's just this endless loop of nobody talking. Commit, steer to the skid, and finish.
Here's a fun non-Zoom thing that's happening. I assume you heard about the Anchorage School District. Their plan is to split classes into two groups and have each group go to school 2 days a week.
Like an A-B rotation.
Yeah. And they're going to start off with shorter class days, too. And no before and after school care.
Wow.
So it's going to be real tough for a lot of parents. And there are a lot of parents who are really mad. But I think if you're paying attention, it should not be unexpected. and that's, you know, that's their plan for what things look like this week. You know, if we keep setting record numbers of cases every day, I suspect there won't be school at all.
Well, if they do an A-B rotation, are they going to be able to socially distance the kids? Is that the point? Is there going to have a classroom space to spread everybody out?
I believe that's the plan. Is they're going to put up partitions in the classes. It's going to be masks on all day. The groups are going to be isolated. So there's not going to be any intermingling of classes or other groups. So, you know, and you're not going to go to any of your specialty classes.
No more percussion or woodwind instruments.
Yeah. I mean, like at my kids' elementary school, after they do the morning announcements, the first thing would happen is the entire school would then go to a different classroom to do math. Because they did math according to ability. So you often were not in math with your normal school teacher. So, you know, 8:35, the entire school was out in the hall going to a different class. So that's not going to be happening.
Yeah, it's going to be a different... I don't even know. Our clinics are gearing up to reopen. Half of them are open now, but they're only taking basically urgent type things. As far as the future, we don't know what it's going to be like. If all the clinics are open, how do you stay socially distant? How do you anyway, there's lots of logistics that are going to be what they are. So it's, yeah, I don't know. I got yelled at. I went into a Safeway yesterday and apparently I was walking the wrong way down an aisle.
No. So, trying to get somebody killed.
I didn't even know, but at least I have my mask on. So it is what it is. I don't even know. it's the new reality. You know, flying is going to be interesting too. So, you know, I'd be lying if I said I was completely carefree about it, but luckily there's no middle seat.
I've got a friend who, he has continued to fly because a lot of his work is out of state. So he's actually traveled quite a bit over the past couple of months. And he said the airplane flight is probably the easiest part of the whole thing.
Oh.
Because every airport has their own procedures and you got to keep track of, and you got to, he's got to be tested all the time. You know, whenever he travels, more tests. And so he said the plane is actually the most relaxing part of the whole trip, even though you're there. There's no in-flight service, and it's masks on all the time.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm just right now, knock on wood, everybody's healthy in the family, so I'm hoping it stays that way.
Yes.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.